What's going on, everybody? Justin Morgenstein back with you for another Friday edition of Phillies Today. And how about this baseball team we got in town right now? How about them? Today, I have the pleasure of talking about the hottest team in the sport right now, best record in the major leagues, first place in the National League East, and that is the Philadelphia Phillies. Not a ton of critique right now, but they are coming off a loss. So I'm just going to kind of run through my observations from this past week, including the split with the Blue Jays at home, go through the lineup and the pitching staff as well, as they've done the past week, and a little preview of the Marlins series down in Miami this weekend as well. I also haven't had the chance to talk about the Trey Turner injury since it happened last Friday, which is definitely a bummer, and he's going to miss some time here, so we'll touch on that at some point as well. So we got a full slate of stuff to discuss here, and it's always fun to do it when your team is two games up in the NL East, 14 games over 500, and on pace to win over 110 games. So I'm fired up. I'm really excited to get to this pod and start talking, Phil. So let's get to it. Want to start with this lineup right now. And who else but Bryce Harper getting really hot at a really good time right here. So this is right after Trey Turner goes down on Friday. And in a minute, I'll get to my thoughts on him. But you kind of start to wonder once he goes down if some guys other than Alec Boehm really can get hot here and carry for a few days. And it feels like Bryce is finally locked in. And he was able to fill that void nicely for a few games here. He's the three-homer, 10 RBI stretch from Sunday into Tuesday. And even when he's getting out right now, it feels like he is just missing some balls. His OPS is at 894, excuse me, right now. He's walking a ton. He's fourth in all of baseball with 25 walks on the year. And that's a good sign, given what Alec Boehm has been able to do behind him so far. And it still feels like he's had some tough batted ball luck, Bryce has. So I expect that to maybe even increase his numbers as we get through 162 here. But he's been really, really good at the plate over the past few games. And you can't go without saying his defense, too. His defense over at first base has been pretty stellar as well. He's currently sitting at 3 outs above average, which right now would be good for the 93rd percentile in baseball, and I think in second only behind Christian Walker in the National League. So he could be competing for a gold glove there too, but really great stuff from Bryce there after Turner goes down. And I want to talk about the Turner thing for sure, though. So it happens last Friday night in their game against the Giants after he does the double steal and steals home on the walk to Harper. And it's a hamstring injury. He's expected to be out 6 weeks total at the minimum. And it's a tough blow for both Trey and the team because for Trey personally, he had gotten off to such a hot start as opposed to last year where he wasn't as productive until August. And he was really hitting the ball well out of the two holes to start the year, which is exactly what you want. And then it happens on such an innocent-looking play, which was a great play, by the way, with that him coming all the way in from second. But he pops a hammy and is down for over a month. And I do think, I want to say, it was pretty cool, by the way, and I believe it was Todd Zielecki for MLB.com who came out with an article talking about how Trey had been in the cage after he got hurt, talking with certain guys, not just when he got hurt, but throughout the season. But after he goes down and before Bryce goes on this little hot streak here, Trey was apparently showing Bryce film from his MVP season in 2021 and said that there was a difference in his hands at the plate from now until then. And then apparently Bryce makes an adjustment accordingly, and boom, here we go. He gets on a little hot streak right here. So, and then it says he talked to Boehm prior to his hot streak, and he talked to Rojas before. I think it was in St. Louis maybe. They got it going a little bit here as well. So good to see him being able to contribute off the field as well, and I expect him to continue to do that while he's down over the next X amount of weeks. So, but let's talk about the guys that are going to need to replace a lot of the production in the middle infield while Trey Turner is out. And the main guy, of course, is going to be Bryson Stott. The plan for Rob Thompson and the Phillies, it seems, according to Topper, is going to be that Stott plays the majority of the games still at second base while Trey Turner is down, despite him playing shortstop pretty much for the entirety of the 2022 season and as he came up in the minors. But they want Edmundo Sosa to be the primary shortstop for the next month and a half or so. The other option, of course, would be you move Stott back to short for now, and then you have Whit Merrifield, who is probably the better hitter between him and Sosa. You'd have him in the lineup and would bring Sosa off the bench. But I can understand wanting to keep Stott at second for the majority of the rest because he has turned himself in to a Gold Glove caliber defender there. And if Whit Merrifield is lighting the world on fire at the plate, I'd maybe have an issue with it. But Sosa is, you know, pretty sure-handed over there at short, his natural position when he came up with the Cardinals. So I don't have an issue with that being the plan for now. But touching on Bryce Stott again here, I think he's quietly been much better lately as compared to the first month of the season. Last 10 games, he's hitting .323 with two homers, nine RBI, 10 runs scored. So been much more of the Bryce Stott we're accustomed to as the calendar has flipped into May. I think he's third on the team in walks, and he's working some really, really good at-bats the way he was in the beginning of the year last year when he got off to that hit streak to begin the season. And does that mean he moves back up in the lineup at some point? It definitely could. But I'm not sure that the two-hole is probably the spot for him right now since, you know, he'd be in between two left-handed hitters, of course, in Schwarber and Harper. But maybe he ends up hitting fifth again at some point with Trey Turner out. So we'll see how Rob Thompson kind of maneuvers the lineup there. It feels like there's a chance that Bryson Stott comes back up at some point if he continues to, you know, hit the ball well and see the ball well. So also, Bryson Stott has five steals in his last 10 games as well, which will the Phillies will certainly need with Trey out, by the way. And while I'm on the subject of steals, this is just a random thought that I've had throughout many games so far this year. Why is it that the Phillies all of a sudden just execute the little league first and third steal every time now? It feels automatic, and catchers don't even throw down to second base now. Like, I thought this was the major leagues. Are teams really scared to throw down the second with a man on third? Just, again, random observation, but whenever there's first and third, I almost think of it as second and third already because the Phillies are pretty much stealing on that every time. So, and again, I love the aggressive base running. I think it's been a big part of their early season success here. And again, just it feels like they're kind of doing everything right now. So that is another good thing that they've been doing, and especially just being aggressive on the base pass. So moving on here, Kyle Schwarber, James and Jack on their High Hopes pod brought this up last week, but I kind of agree with them, and it just feels like Kyle Schwarber has been so much better than what his numbers say right now. Like, he's hitting .211 with nine homers and 719 OPS, which is low for Kyle Schwarber standards. It's not great, but he's still getting on base, 91st percentile in walk percentage, and as always, he's hitting the crap out of the ball. He's hitting it really hard. He just needs to get it in the air a little more consistently, but I think he'll be fine. No indication to me that he's not going to have another 40-plus homer season. It's pretty much what he's on pace to do. I think it's about 39 homers he's on pace for, and he typically doesn't heat up until the month of June anyway, as we know. But again, I don't see him moving anywhere in the lineup. The Phillies tend to win a lot of ball games when he leads off. So it was also pretty funny to see him in left field earlier this week. I know some of the guys in the dugout were getting on him after he made a couple of plays out there. So that was pretty funny too. But yeah, I think Schwarber's going to be fine. He's still working a productive at-bat out of the leadoff spot as he typically does. And they just win baseball games with him there. So why mess with it? He will be in the leadoff spot. Don't argue it anymore. That's your leadoff hitter. Anyway. Moving on, JT, been good since he's moved to the two-hole with Trey out. Topper made the decision. It seemed pretty easy to put JT there after Trey Turner goes down. And I know it's a small sample size here, but in the four games he started in the two spots since Trey went down, he's 7-for-16 with three extra base hits and two walks. Pretty good. He's hitting the ball pretty hard, staying at double plays too, which I feel like has been a big problem for JT over the years when he has hit in the two-hole. And it feels like they don't have a ton of options other than JT to hit in that spot right now. I know Witt got the nod to bat second when JT sat the other day. Ends up being, you know, that typical game where they send out, like, their D lineup, or their spring training, it seemed like, lineup against Jose Berríos, who was the AL ERA leader at the time. And then, what do you know, he gets smoked by Cody Clemens for a two-run homer there, and eventually Bryce gets the grand slam. And they end up putting an A spot on him in less than four innings, but pretty happy with where JT is at. Feel confident that his numbers at the end of the year will look better than last year with the changes he's made mechanically over the offseason and into right now. He just feels like he's in a good spot at the plate, and the numbers are showing that. So, speaking of numbers shown, and Alec Bohm still hitting, man. I know he got the streak snap the other day, but it looks like he has really elevated his game to another level. And I was someone, I feel like I've been on the record on this podcast, who honestly wasn't sure if that was possible heading into the year. And I think the most impressive thing that he's kind of taken to another level here is being selective with how he's hitting the baseball and what he's chasing. He's got a 413 OBP, which is good for fifth in baseball. He's in the 95th percentile in whiff percentage, which is great. And it just feels like he's being very selective in what he wants to chase. And it's just part of the reason he seems so locked in right now. Also, we have to talk about this. He's at a 2 outs above average defensively right now, which would be by far the best defensive production of his career. He's been so solid over at third base this year. It's just really great to see. And I feel like every time a ball's hit this way, his way now, he's going to make the play. Not just him, but everybody on this team, it really just feels like has improved within the infield. And you have to give so much credit to Bobby Dickerson, who works with these infielders, because there's been a very noticeable difference in how these guys approach the defensive side of things over the past couple of years. So Bone's been great, both sides of the ball. Just, you can't say enough about him. He's literally made himself an MVP candidate early on in the year here. So we'll see if he can keep it up over a full 162. Obviously, he's not going to hit above 350, I think, but I think there's a very good chance he could be above a 300 hitter here to finish out the year and get to where he was RBI-wise last year, right around 100. So that would be something the Phillies and us as fans would take all day from Alec Boehm hitting out of the four spot. So, Brandon Marsh, want to get to him. First of all, maybe the greatest Sunday Night Baseball mic'd up of all time. I'm typically one of those people who thinks that the whole in-game mic'd up interview thing is kind of doing too much sometimes, and half the time the players are really boring anyway. But as Brandon Marsh typically does, he was so entertaining. And also, by the way, the relationship that him and Marsh have created has been so awesome. Like, it's just incredible what they've done. You know, they're roommates now. And before Marsh gets here, it felt like Boehm was pretty quiet and kind of a kept-to-himself guy. And it seems like Marsh has kind of brought the personality out of him, which is cool because it just adds another layer to what seems like one of the best clubhouses in baseball, and you know, maybe that this franchise has ever seen in terms of the personalities and togetherness to pair with the talent that they have. And you bring that back to Trey, helping guys in the cage as well. It's just nice that this is the case with this team, that they feel so interconnected and they feel like such a strong unit. I know they're going to Nick Castellanos' house to hang out and do stuff there too. I saw some of those videos. And it just feels like we've come such a long way from, you know, the 2018 Phils with Carlos Santana breaking TVs in the clubhouse when guys are playing video games. But yeah, the Marsh in-game interview was awesome. I know he's gone on a bit of a slide hitting-wise recently since his hot start, which isn't totally shocking because I didn't expect him to keep up some of those numbers. His OPS was over 1,000, it felt like, at one point. But he's sort of an up-and-down kind of guy. I'd like to see him walk a little more. His OBP has dipped down to under 300. But I wouldn't be shocked to see him get those numbers back up as the season moves along. And I will say, I also wouldn't be shocked if him and Stott swap spots at one point and Stott gets moved back up into the lineup and maybe they move Marsh down. It just feels like when one guy's getting hot, you can move him up. And then the other guy, you know, needs to kind of figure out a swing a little bit, you move him back down. Glove for Marsh has still been great, though, in left field. Still would trust him in a big spot at the plate, too. For example, something that maybe goes unnoticed that I wanted to mention but really stood out to me on Sunday night in the win against the Giants was when Brandon Marsh comes up twice with a guy on second base, no outs. And what's the fundamental baseball thing you say there? Oh, you just got to have a productive at-bat, move the runner over. Twice he manages to make contact to the right side, advances the runner, which is exactly what you need to do in that spot. And this is kind of what the Phillies lacked in Arizona last year. And for all the people who, you know, called into the radio station, called or just went on to Twitter and complained, you know, oh, this team doesn't play small ball, or this team just doesn't know how to manufacture runs without hitting homers. This was a great example of them executing with runners on base. And it turned out to be crucial in a one-run win where he ends up scoring one run off of, or one of the runs he advanced ends up scoring, and then you end up winning by run. So really good stuff for Marsh there. I think he'll get back to where he was towards the beginning of the season eventually. I just think that he has to just make some adjustments, and he'll be fine. Even though Phils do face a bunch of left-handers this weekend, so wouldn't be shocked if he sat for a couple games there. But Nick Castellanos, moving to the other side of the outfield. Still not great, but definitely better. Last seven games, he's hitting .269. OPS slightly above 700. Again, it's not great, but it's better than the way he started. You just have to hope at this point he can get a feel for whatever he's missing, because he's definitely a feel type of guy, if that makes sense. Like, once he gets back in a rhythm and he feels good, he gets a little hot, sort of ride that momentum into a hot streak like he did against Atlanta in the division series last year. It seems like Topper is pretty steadfast in playing him every day. So if he's going to get going, you really hope it's soon. And I just mentioned the lefties, and I will say this. We'll get more into it in my preview of the series this weekend. Three left-handers in Miami, back in his hometown. Might be a good time to get him going. If there ever was a time, this could be it. And I remember last year when the Phillies went into Miami and they had a couple of those big comeback wins in August, I think, when the wild card chase was in full swing. He had a massive home run off David Robertson to send that game into extra innings, and they ended up winning. I think there's a chance that he could have a big hit in the series, and maybe it propels him to, you know, kind of get back to what you hope for out of Nick Castellanos, and that's at least some power in the middle towards the bottom of your lineup. And I just think that, hey, at least his WAR is getting slightly better. I know he's still last on the team in WAR. I think he's at a negative 0.7 WAR now, but at one point I think it was almost negative one. So it's going to climb, you hope, and he's going to be playing every day. So you just hope at one point he can catch some fire, because when he does, he can turn into one of the most dangerous hitters in the league. But we're still kind of waiting for that Nick Castellanos hot streak to come about here. So moving off the lineup a little bit, I want to talk about this pitching staff. And I know that I've just all year harped on how good they've been and just how dominant of a staff they've become. And another week of just really, really strong outings from your starters here. Zach Wheeler, it seems like, is the consensus Cy Young favorite at this point. Just been so dominant, even when he doesn't have his best stuff. He goes six innings, no earned runs in his last outing against the Giants. Ranger, probably right behind him in that Cy Young race, along with Tyler Glass now. I know Freddie Peralta from Milwaukee's also in there. Weird outing last time for Ranger, just because of all that rain. There was a delay. It was pouring during the game, and the Phils end up blowing out the Giants anyway. He still gets the quality start in that one. Gives up three earned over six after the homer to Wilmer Flores, who, by the way, historically has dominated Ranger for whatever reason. I feel like Wilmer Flores has dominated the Phillies for whatever reason. But, yeah, just a weird guy to have dominate you. But anyway, he still looks great, and I really, really, really need all-star Ranger this year. I've talked about it since the beginning of the year. I felt like he could do it, but it would just be so fun to see Ranger in an all-star game, and he deserves it, man. 6-0 with a 1.72 ERA and a league-leading .72 whip. What else can you say? He's been absolutely dominant. One of the most fun guys to watch in the league right now. He's incredible at fielding his position. I pray that he gets enough innings so that he can win his gold glove, which he finally deserves. I know it'll be funny to see Zach Wheeler get one, then him get one. Maybe they'll have a little competition going there. But he's just, you can't say anything more than he's been incredible. And we're going to see him tonight. I'm really excited to watch him pitch. It's really appointment television every time he goes on the mound now. And it's just fun. He's a fun guy to root for. And Aaron Nola kind of got hurt by balls in play on Wednesday. He gives up four runs and gets the loss to the Blue Jays after he had a weird outing on Friday as well. But the Phillies end up winning that game, even though he leaves early. His pitch count was way up. Really couldn't locate much in the early part of that game, but he kind of bears down and minimizes damage there. But his numbers still look really good, and I'm encouraged by the start that Nola's gotten off to. And I'll tell you what, between him, Jordan Montgomery, and Blake Snell, who are the premier free agent pitchers this winter, Nola has certainly been the best of the group so far through a month and change of the season. So Nola's been decent, kind of what you need him to be. And he's another guy who is just giving you a chance to win night in and night out. And that's really all you could ask from your starters right now. And I think Taiwan Walker has actually done the same thing since he's come back. I think he's been better than expected. I know the numbers got a bit skewed from that homer that he gave up at the end of his outing in San Diego. Didn't think he should have been in that game. I thought that was on Rob Thompson. But I think he's looked really solid so far. He's keeping balls down in the zone, which is huge for him because it makes his splitter more effective. But he's pitching to contact well. And against San Fran on Sunday, there was a lot of good stuff to take from that outing. I just think that, especially early in games, which was the problem last year, he just seems very locked in. He's executing pitches. Even though, like in that first inning, he had a couple hard hit balls off him. I thought he rebounded very well, which was another thing he struggled with last year. He rebounded well and was able to give you a really nice outing on Sunday Night Baseball and where the Phils win that game. So, again, giving you a chance to win. Same thing with Nola, and the same thing with this new Christopher Sanchez, Spencer Turnbull piggyback, which had an awesome debut against the Blue Jays on Tuesday. I understand why they're doing this. I talked about it a little last week because Wheeler likes to pitch on regular rest, but what a great problem to have right now when it feels like you might have one starter too many. We'll see if that means they make a move at the deadline to maybe enhance the bullpen and you can maybe pawn off a starter if somebody wants a Spencer Turnbull. I know, or maybe a younger prospect. I know Mason Miller of the A's is the hot name right now. Their closer, their young closer, who is absolutely electric. He's throwing 103, and they converted him from a starter to a reliever this year and has just been phenomenal for the Oakland A's. And maybe they get him. Maybe they get one last bullpen arm and they, you know, try to trade Walker, trade Turnbull, or maybe they put Mick Abel on the market. Who knows? But with all the starting pitching depth they have here in the organization right now, it is definitely a good problem to have and something that will, you know, benefit you later on, whether it's via trade or in the postseason when you need arms. So that is good stuff from the rotation, as, you know, always this season so far. And they should be able to dominate once again this weekend when they go down to Miami in front of, you know, what is it going to be? Hundreds of fans down there in Lone Depot Park. Oh boy, the Marlins are bad. I know you can't ask for a sweep every series, and that's kind of what I've been doing against some of these bad teams, and they've been doing it. But man, the Marlins are really bad. They trade Arise. It just feels like they kind of have no plan down there. They got some pitching injuries still, and that should be a series that the Phillies should really, really win three games. At least two or three you should definitely win. But want to preview this series a little bit, go through the matchups. Tonight, a 7-10 start. We got Ranger back on the mound facing Trevor Rogers, who the Phillies have kind of crushed historically. He's 1-5 with a 6.7 ERA in 9 appearances. A chance for these right-handed hitters to get going. But I feel like Rhys Hoskins always crushed Trevor Rogers. But yeah, I don't know. I just feel like he has. But we'll see if they can get Rangers some early run support, see if these right-handed bats can get going. Saturday, 4-10, you've got Taijuan Walker probably going up against Jesus Luzardo, it seems, as he comes off the injured list from his elbow issue there. We'll see if Lizardo's at a pitch limit as he comes back from that injury. But he was really tough last year. But the Phillies beat him in the wild card, I remember. We'll be interested to see if it's him, and if it is, if he's on a pitch count. And then to wrap it up on Sunday, you've got Zach Wheeler against yet another lefty. Three lefties this weekend, potentially, which is rare, in Braxton Garrett. So those are the matchups for this weekend. And that'll wrap it up for this edition of Phillies Today. Thank you, as always, for listening, and I'm really excited to see if this baseball team can keep up what they've been doing, because it feels like they're on pace to have a really, really special regular season here, and the vibes couldn't be better. So just take care of business down in Miami. For Phillies 24/7, this has been Justin Morgenstein, and have a good weekend, everybody. See ya.